I represent Nina Jeranek in a matter that was before the Fairfax County Circuit Court.
This is a complex case. I know you barely got a few words out, but let me just jump in because I'd like your help with a couple of things. You know, the normal sequence on this is you classify, you value, and then you distribute.
Yes, sir.
Is there anywhere in the record where, with Mr. Jeranek's residence, the court actually valued it? I couldn't find it.
No, except by inference, Your Honor. Or not by inference. The evidence was that he purchased 2621 Walter Reed Drive for $260,000 cash.
Right.
The evidence, which was not in dispute, was that he took $210,000 out of a marital account in cash, and he borrowed $60,000 from his family. And, of course, there was more than a $260,000 price. There were closing costs and so forth. And he took those funds, and he bought Walter Reed Drive with it for $260,000.
Right,
that was his testimony. That was the
right,
documentary
there was a
evidence.
Stipulation that on, I forget the date, but that it was worth, as I recall, $305,000. And then you filed the motion early on to have an alternate valuation date.
That's
which
correct.
The court at the back end said it was granting. But anyway, I just...
That's all correct.
I think that was one of the things that confused me in this somewhat confusing way of doing business. I just couldn't find an actual valuation for the property that's at issue.
Well, I think it was valued at $305,000 based upon the appraisal. The property was purchased in January of 2014. It was appraised in September of 2014. That was immediately prior to the first trial date, but the first trial date got continued by Judge Devine to February, the middle of February of 2015. The evidence was uncontroverted that there was $260,000 cash that acquired that asset, and that its only appraisal was subsequently about, 7 months later at 305.
If you're right about this, don't we have to send it back for a redo of the ED? I mean, isn't that our normal? You know, when there's I know it's dreadful for the parties who spend a lot of money, you know, and all that. But if there's this flaw, I mean, I don't know that we on appeal can say, well, you split things 50-50. Here's what happened. So split it. Because the court may decide to do something else. I'm not saying the court has to open the whole can of worms.
Well, just let me follow up on that, because it seems to me, I'm confused. I'll join Judge McCall. I'm confused as well by this record. It's not clear to me how some of these assets were traced.
They weren't, Your Honor.
And, you know, I think some of the muddle needs to be clarified before we can frankly address some of the merits of these issues. So,
well, the only way I can respond to that, Your Honors, is that the court intended, by her own statement, because I asked her after the ruling, that court intended to equally divide marital assets. The confusion was not in the evidence. The confusion was not in the argument. The confusion was in the court. The court,
and that ties into my earlier question, which is, if the court says, look, all along I want to do a 50-50 split, I value this property at X amount, but I can't find in the record where, and maybe it's understandable if there's a stipulation as to its worth, etc., but until the court actually values the property, then it's difficult to say what the split was going to be, and then it's compounded by the seeming confusion between the Rio, whatever property,
Rio.
And then the Walter Reed condo.
Yeah. Right. Well, that
isn't clear.
Yes, sir.
Perhaps the judge, how he got to 62,000. So it's clear how he got to 62,000 for a 50-50 split. But and I gather, correct me if I'm wrong, because it is complicated, that he did that from the Rio property?
That's correct.
It seemed to me he was mixing up, perhaps, the Rio property with the Walter Reed property.
That's correct.
Coming up with the value for the split.
That's correct. Let me just offer this, if I may.
Maybe let you get in a word to help us out.
Well, no. When you file a motion for an alternate valuation, you do so for a purpose. The purpose is to avoid the dissipation that occurred after the alternate valuation date.
But here, that motion was granted.
It was, Your Honor.
I question whether it was actually used.
It wasn't used. But it was granted, and the court found that the asset was a mixed asset. That is, Walter Reed Drive was a mixed asset. Why? Because the evidence was $60,000 borrowed from my family, $210,000 out of the marital cash account. That's the evidence. Then the court finds that the Rio Drive property was a marital asset. It was a marital asset that was purchased for $100,000. This is what the court found. The evidence didn't sustain that, but Mr. Jeranek had borrowed $100,000 from his friend Mr. Kovac shortly after he bought Walter Reed Drive to live in. He then put the HELOC on Walter Reed Drive. He then, when the HELOC went on, he paid back Mr. Kovac the $100,000, except he paid him $102,000 because he paid him interest on the $100,000. He bought that Rio for $100,000. This is a separate investment, right? Because the marriage accumulation has stopped. The parties are separated. He uses the marital asset or the mixed asset as collateral to borrow money that he alone owed. The value is still in the property in Walter Reed Drive. It was still worth the $260,000 he paid for it. But the equity reduced because when the court divides a marital asset, it divides the equity in the real estate. It doesn't divide the value of the property. And that's why we filed the motion for an alternate valuation date. Meanwhile, he makes improvements to that condo on Rio Drive. He sells it for $175,000 in December of 2014. He had purchased it in February of 2014. So he made a $75,000 increase in the value of that asset through his equity, through his private investment, through his sweat equity.
I mean, that I get where this 62 and change figure comes from for Rio.
That's
I'm
correct.
At a complete loss for why that same figure would have anything to do
it
with
didn't,
the Walter
Your Honor. That's why we're here. That was one of the errors. And our contention is that you cannot exercise discretion, or that it's abuse of an exercise of discretion, if it's not based upon facts that are in evidence, or if it's based upon a misunderstanding of the facts that are in evidence. That said, the court found that the Rio transaction was a marital transaction. It was not. Nobody contended it was. Indeed, the property didn't even exist.
Under the statute, property acquired during the marriage is marital. Right.
Yes, sir.
And so if you buy a house, even though you may be separated, even though you're contemplating divorce, if you buy a house and you're still married, isn't that marital? I mean, I know you often negotiate an exception to avoid that dilemma, but why isn't it marital?
Why isn't Rio marital?
Right.
Because it wasn't during the marriage. The marital estate ceases at the last separation, and the marriage didn't buy that. The defendant bought that as a separate investment. He bought that with money he borrowed from Mr. Kovac. He paid Mr. Kovac back with money he borrowed from Burke and Herbert Bank. That was not a marital transaction. That was a separate transaction.
Right.
And what happened in the interim is...
Let me stop you. Why do you say the marriage ended at separation? I mean, typically marriages end with divorce. That's why.
Well,
what terminates the marriage.
You're correct. You're correct, Judge Humphreys. But the marital estate ceases to accumulate... That is to say, your...
What's the authority for... I mean, the statute refers to property acquired during marriage, as McCullough just pointed out, as being marital. And as long as... So, I mean, it doesn't say prior to separation. It says during the marriage.
Your Honor, the labor of the marital partnership... The product of the labor, that is your salary or what have you, ceases as of the date of the last separation of the parties. If I had the statute before me, I would quote that provision to you. The value of the marital assets continues to go up, continues to go down until it is equitably distributed. But your services no longer belong to the marriage when you stop your cohabitation, in effect.
So I think we'd like to give you an opportunity. Statute says that the court's supposed to consider all income. And here the court just flat refused to consider the house flipping income.
That's correct.
That's one of your assignments there. Would you like to address that?
I would, Your Honor. The common law and the statute are quite clear that the court is obliged to calculate or to find all of the income of both of the parties for the support of a child. Now, you can exercise discretion to make a different award than the statutory guidelines provide, but you're obliged to calculate and find all of the income of the parties. In this case, the judge below decided that the income from flipping, and incidentally, he also was a realtor and testified that his average commissions were $3,000 to $4,000 a year. But she found that you don't include the erratic income because it's too erratic.
Well that's why we have 3-year average.
That's what we argued in our motion to reconsider, none of which did she address. I mean, in her ruling on that, the only thing that she addressed in our well-briefed motion to reconsider was that she had neglected to find that Ms. Jerinek had accumulated an $86,000 debt to her father to sustain her legal expenses. And then she said, well, I forgot about that and added that in as a finding, but made no change in any of the equitable distribution. The only thing she did was to lower the child support, not based on a different calculation of income, but rather based upon the fact that she limited the child care expenses to that of the licensed child care provider that wasn't involved in this case.
But you argued before the trial court, unless we're saying you ought to at least average it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And it was the average over the last 3 years was $165,000 worth of capital gains. His income was, at the date of the hearing, $121,000 from his employment. And his average.
I don't know that we have the authority to require the court to use a 3-year average, but I mean, the law is certainly clear they need to come up with a number somehow, and that's one option that's available to it if it finds that it's erratic enough, I guess, to that's more difficult to calculate any other way.
And your 2-minute rebuttal light is just going off, so it's up to you how to use your time.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. All right, help us out with this, to us anyway, confusing record.
Make it all
record.
Clear.
All right, excellent.
Thank you. If it please the court, David Clark, Your Honor, I represent, of course, Mr. Vladimir Jerinek. I'm also ably assisted today by Ms. Lauren Fredrickson of our firm. Your Honor, I don't think that the court was confused. Although there was a misstatement. Pardon me?
We're the only ones that are confused.
Well, I think in her ruling is consistent with the following explanation. Let me begin reluctantly with an apology on some respect. On page 3 of my brief, I referenced the Rio Drive property as being hybrid. I didn't mean that. It was in my position is that the court was correct. It was entirely marital for the reasons I'll get into if necessary. But in any event, in my brief,
it was entirely marital?
I think so.
Because yes, it was acquired during the marriage?
It was acquired during the marriage and in part funded by a line of credit used against the marital residence Rio Drive 2, because there was an earlier Rio Drive. Excuse me, Walter Reed 2. Here's my explanation as to how the court came to the determination that it did. Bear in mind, undisputed, that Mr. Jerinek had $260,000 of premarital funds. That's the seed money he had to buy and sell properties. He also came to the marriage with a portfolio of investment properties. Now, over the...
Excuse me, but...
Yes, sir.
I believe Mr. Turnbull said that that $260,000 were marital funds.
No, sir.
Not at the outset, anyway.
Not at the outset. Excuse me. Not at the outset.
Okay.
And what happened was, and there's, I don't think there's any dispute about that. And what happened was that during this relatively short period of time in which the parties were married, Mr. Jurinak, and to some extent certainly Mrs. Jurinak as well, engaged in no less than 9 separate transactions of buying and selling property. Some of the properties sold were properties that he had prior to marriage. And he did use, for the most part, deposited most of those sale proceeds in his account that he owned prior to marriage. I don't think there's any question about that. And but what judge, what the trial judge did was applying Robbins was that the more transactions that occurred over this 18-20 month period, and there were 9, that the more that they occurred, the less became separate, and the more became marital. And as the judge finally said, with the last transaction, that being Rio Drive, that. That was wholly marital. That was wholly marital for the reasons that I hopefully addressed earlier. So at the end of the day, prior to the divorce, they're left with only one property. That's the one that they owned prior to Rio Drive, that being Walter Reed II. And the court found that that was a hybrid property. And again, my friend Mr. Cervell and I don't disagree about that. But what I challenge counsel to do is to point to one reference in the record where the judge made the determination as to what the separate portion was worth and what the marital portion was worth of Rio Drive 2. Strike that. Walter Reed too. I'm so sorry, Judge Haley.
See why we're confused.
Yeah, now.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. No, I'm sorry. That's my error.
What about the alternate valuation date?
Well, the alternate valuation date was very important. In the reply brief, they said that...
Well, let me stop you.
Okay.
Do you agree that the court made the motion and then didn't basically honor the motion it granted?
No, I don't. Because had there not been a... alternate valuation date, and if the court only considered the assets that were in existence as of the time of the hearing, there would have virtually been no marital assets, or at least no non-retirement marital assets, because, bear in mind, Walter Reed Drive 2 was the precious little equity in Walter Reed Drive because of the encumbrance of the line of credit of $240,000 on Walter Reed II. There was really very little equity, if any, in that property. The proceeds from Rio Drive had been spent. So there really weren't any non-retirement marital assets for the court to divide at the time of the hearing. But what the court said was, I'm going to grant the motion for the alternate valuation, and that being the time in which Walter Reed was purchased, but before the encumbrance of the $240,000 line of credit. And that I find to be a mixed or a hybrid property. The question then becomes, and it's the key question, what portion of that property is separate and what portion is marital?
You're talking about Walter Reed.
Walter Reed II. Yes, sir. And the court made the determination that with the last property, that being Rio Drive, in which case, by that time, using the Robbins analysis, by that time was wholly marital. It had a net sale proceeds of $62,500. That's the last asset standing. So what we do is, I think what the court did was, and I can cite you to the record, is that that's the last property standing. It's 62,500. therefore, I'm going to apply that number as the marital portion of Rio Drive of Walter Reed II.
And just to follow up with you, ask you the same question. Is there anywhere in the record where the court actually valued Walter Reed II? I couldn't find
it. I thought it was 305 by way of a stipulation.
There was a stipulation, but then there was the motion for an alternate valuation date, and the court never, in an order or from the bench, accepted the stipulation. So anyway, I just...
Well, I don't mean to interrupt. I understood and accepted that the fair market value of Walter Reed II was this $300,000 figure. And I knew, and whether it was 240 or 305 or whatever the number was, I'm not sure that's... I appreciate the need for the court to value property as the date of the hearing, or at least the alternate valuation date. But the point is that the court did make the determination that, A, it was hybrid, and, two, that the marital portion of that property was what was left over at the end of the day, that being the $62,500 figure. And that she derives from the last property of these nine transactions of being representing the net sale proceeds. And that's really, at the end of the day, what was left before trial. But in order to take that value and award wife some compensation, the, and I think it was appropriate, the alternate valuation date was Walter Reed II before the encumbrance, mixed property, and made the determination, therefore, that the marital portion was the 62.5. And that's how she got there. Because as we go down of each of these transactions, it gets less and less separate and more marital. And then by the end of the day, the last property is wholly marital. And that's why I characterize that property as marital. I want to correct my brief in that respect.
Can I ask one quick question?
Yes, sir, Judge Haley.
Do you consider nine transactions in this time period an erratic number of transactions?
I don't know that it's an erratic number of transactions. It was inconsistent as to whether or not some were profitable and some were not profitable. But that gets into the, I don't want to leave the equitable distribution if there are any remaining questions. That's sort of a nice dovetail into the issue of what his compensation was or what his earnings were for the purposes of child support. The court found, and used the word erratic, I think a better characterization would be speculative going forward. It would be speculative going forward as to what that income would be for the following reasons. Bear in mind that those nine transactions were funded in large measure by the seed money of $60,000 that he had that was separate property, and also a host of investment properties, a portfolio of investment properties that he had at the very beginning of the marriage. The court found then, however, going forward, that there was no more seed money. There wasn't any more money.
Well, and the record amply supports, given the expenditures on the new wife and the litigation and all that, that he had depleted.
And the lifestyle that the parties enjoyed. Right. I think that really was the lion's share of the spending of the money.
Does the statute permit a court to do that, though? I mean, the statute's clear that all income, including irregular income, has to be part of the gross income computation.
Your Honor, I think certainly it does, but what the court can't do, and I think it's the Howe case talks about, but it's not what the obligor may earn in the future. There has to be a basis as to what he may earn in the future.
And, the nature of flipping houses is very, you know, roller coaster
right.
situation. There's no way to predict whether you're going to make money or lose money or how much you're going to make or how much you're going to lose. But that's exactly why averages are long-term averages are appropriate for as an alternative way to compute these.
Judge Humphreys, I agree with that, but bear this in mind, please. The reason he was able to go through these various transactions over this 18-20-month period was, A, he started with this very significant seed money, had a portfolio of properties.
He had Which he still mostly has. He still mostly has that portfolio of properties that he rents out.
No, I think he had five properties, I hope that's right, at the time that he, right before marriage, he wound up only with two very modest properties that that remained at his separate.
But is there any evidence in the record that he, from him or some other source, that he was not going to do this going forward? That, in other words, he is thrown in the towel. He's not going to do this house flipping anymore.
I can't say that. No, I don't think so. But I will say this, that it's not just that he didn't have the seed money, he didn't have the portfolio that he did before.
I mean, I understand the depletion of the seed money, but this guy's pretty resourceful. I mean, he's getting these lines of credit, he's borrowing from his subcontractors, he's borrowing from family. So why would it be dispositive that the seed money's been depleted when there's no evidence that he plans to stop doing this?
Well, that's not just that. It's also that he, according to the court, was able to do all of these transactions because of the able assistance of Mrs. Jurinak, and the court accepted that she was a viable partner in this and that she picked out property. And she also, which obviously he didn't have at the end of the marriage, he also didn't have the ability for this partner to advance credit. You remember that the record reflects. And so he was handicapped. He didn't have the wherewithal to do that, and I think that's what persuaded
and that's court. A persuasive argument to the trial court, but I don't read the record as being that's what the trial court found. The trial court seems to indicate that, well, it's erratic, ergo I'm not going to take it into account.
Judge McGill, I'd disagree with you if I could, but I
you're the advocate. You don't have to agree with me.
No. I mean, I appreciate that, but it was clear at the time that he was out of money. He didn't have any money. And as I say, but for the alternate valuation date, there wouldn't have been anything to divide. He just did not have the wherewithal to do it. Yes, he's a resourceful fella, and if there comes a time, I want to be thoughtful of my time, but if there comes a time when he's able to get back on his feet and recover from all of this, mother, wife, has a relief, and that is to come in and ask for an increase. So I appreciate the court's point that the judge did not articulate that, but it was clear that there simply was no wherewithal to do it. Lastly, I don't want to leave that, but just mention the issue of attorney's fees. Sound discretion of the court. I don't believe that there was any abuse of that discretion. The mother came to the custody issue. She wanted sole legal custody. He couldn't have any overnights for 2 years. She had a very strident position. He, too, had a strident position as they got before the court, the custody court, prior to the ED.
Right. All that's laid out in the briefs.
Okay. I appreciate that. And the relief we're asking for, obviously, is that the trial court be affirmed and that appellee be awarded his attorney fees in having to defend. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your argument. We have about 2 minutes for rebuttal.
A couple of things, if I may. First, with regard to the last thing that Mr. Clark addressed, the finding that was most troubling on the ruling was that Ms. Jurinak had unclean hands in the custody dispute, which was a very expensive dispute. And the basis for that was her negotiating position. The basis for that was that she asked for sole custody in her pleading, which, as I recall, is one of the things that a court is permitted to do and is an absolutely lawful contention. And that this young mother sought to defer overnight visitations until the child was two. And for this, she's assigned unclean hands. Whereas with respect to the father, this is a man who was planning to take custody with his girlfriend before the child was born. This is a man, I mean, this is the evidence. This is his testimony. This is the text messages.
But we typically afford broad discretion on these matters to the trial courts. And so it's, I mean, that's just an uphill climb that you have for us to reverse a court.
I understand that, Your Honor, but there's no evidence to sustain the finding that she had unclean hands. Nevertheless, with respect to the equitable distribution, if I can go back to that.
I mean, I understand your point, because an aggressive litigation posture is different than unclean hands. I mean, unclean hands suggests underhanded.
It suggests conduct. And the conduct here, there's plenty of conduct on the part of the husband to justify a finding that he was of unclean hands. And with respect to the cost of the proceeding, incidentally, it all preceded that trial. The position didn't change literally until...
You can conclude. We let your opposing counsel conclude.
All right. May I just say one thing about the ED issue, and that is that at the end of the day, that HELOC had been paid down to $133,000, and the stipulated value of the property was $305,000. And so to take that capital gain that happened 2 months earlier as the only marital asset that was in that mixed asset when there was $210,000 worth of marital money went in it, there's either waste for the $135,000 worth of American Express cards he paid in the 6 months, or there was an error in the finding of the court.
As you lay out in your brief.
Indeed. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much for your arguments. We'll come down and greet counsel.